Well, it's 7 o'clock, so let us begin. Tonight we're beginning a new book, a new portion of the scriptures. We'd like to start a study of the book of Daniel. And I believe that just as when we were studying Amos, in order to get the most out of the book, we need to have a little background so that we can see what the setting is, see what the circumstances are of the writing of this book. And as we learn about this book and its circumstances, we learn a lot of other things that are relative to Old Testament history. Before we get into the book of Daniel, let's look at a couple of things here that I think will be most beneficial to us as a background. Number one, I'd like to read some from Mr. Clark's commentary as to what he says about the history of the Jewish people about this time. He says, "The kingdoms of Israel and Judah, after a series of the most unparalleled ingratitude and rebellion against displays of mercy and benevolence, only equaled by their rebellions, were at last, according to repeated threatenings, given over into the hands of their enemies. The inhabitants of the former country were subdued and carried away captives by the Assyrians, and those of the latter by the Chaldeans." Now, the former country, of course, is Israel. We studied about Israel in the book of Amos, and they were carried away captive by the Assyrians. The latter country, which is Judah, were carried away captive by the Chaldeans. So now we want to center our look upon the area of Judah right now. Judah, after having been harassed by the Chaldeans, Egyptians, and others, was at last invaded by Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon. Jerusalem was besieged and taken. Jehoiachin, the king, who had before become tributary to the Babylonians, with his mother, wives, officers of state, and chief military commanders, princes, and mighty men of valor, to the amount of 10,000, and all the artificers, smiths, and etc., to the number of 1,000, with all that were fit for war, he carried captives to Babylon. Now this king here that he names is Jehoiachin, and we've named some kings on the blackboard over here, and Jehoiachin would come between Jehoiakim, who's on the top, and Zedekiah, who is the second one. And so he tells about him being carried away. We'll cover this a little bit more here in a few minutes. Leaving only the poorest of people behind, under the government of Mattaniah, who was the son of the late King Joash and uncle to Jehoiachin, and having changed his name to Zedekiah. Now we know him by the name of Zedekiah. Zedekiah was the last king that Judah had. Gave him a nominal authority as king over the wretched remains of the people. So they took away all the good, all the artisans, all the men who were fit for war, all of the high and noble, the rich, plus all the goods out of the city and the kingdom. Just hauled them off, and they just left the poor people behind, the one that didn't have any skill or trade, and Zedekiah was the king over them. Zedekiah, after having reigned 9 years, rebelled against Nebuchadnezzar, who, coming against Jerusalem with all his forces, besieged it, and having reduced it to the last extremity by famine, and made a breach in the walls, took the city, pillaged and destroyed the temple by fire, slew the sons of Zedekiah before his face, then put out his eyes, and carried him bound in brazen fetters to Babylon. And this is found in 2 Kings chapter 24 and chapter 25. Thus the temple of God, the most glorious building ever laid on the face of the earth, was profaned, pillaged, and burnt with the king's palace and all the houses of the Jewish nobility in the 11th year of Zedekiah. Now this man identifies the time. The 11th year of Zedekiah, the 19th of Nebuchadnezzar, the first of the 48th Olympiad, the 160th current year of the era of Nabonazar, 424 years, 3 months, and 8 days from the time in which Solomon laid its foundation stone. 424 years and 3 months. In the same month in which the city was taken and the temple burnt, Nebuzaradan, commander-in-chief of the Babylonian forces, carried off the spoils of the temple with the Jewish treasures and the principal part of the residue of the people, and brought them also to Babylon. So they, not only were the most of the people taken originally with Nebuchadnezzar, but now when Zedekiah rebelled, they took most of the residue of the people. And thus Judah was carried away out of her own land 468 years after David began to reign over it. From the division under Rehoboam, 388 years. From the destruction of the kingdom of Israel, 134 years. In the year of the world, 3,416, and before the nativity of our Lord, 588. Whether these dates mean all that much or not, he's trying to pinpoint the time that this happened. And he gives quite an elaborate history here of the things that happened, but this is the as far as I want to go with that, because that takes us up to our point tonight, and that is the book of Daniel. When Nebuchadnezzar came and took these first captives away under the reign of Jehoiakim, he also took Daniel and the three Hebrew children, or three Hebrew young men with Daniel. These four men were young men. They were highly educated. They were of the higher or richer class of the more noble people, and they were given a special position in their captivity because of their high rank before their captivity. And so the book of Daniel then deals with the writings and happenings pertaining to Daniel and these three other men during their captivity. And so we'd like to look at some interesting things now. This kingdom of Babylon, let's look at it first. The kingdom of Babylon. On this map, we can see how that Babylon is located in this area right here on this Euphrates River. And it, in its heyday, was kingdom over all of this territory. It was the most powerful kingdom in the world. Babylon being the seat or capital of it. And the province of Babylon, which would be a smaller area, Daniel was made the ruler over. This kingdom, as we know it in Daniel, came into existence about 606 B.C. by Nebuchadnezzar's father, whose name was Nebuchadnezzar. I believe his name's on our blackboard too. And he reigned about 2 years, and then Nebuchadnezzar reigned 2 years with him, and then Nebuchadnezzar had it alone for some 45 years. This kingdom, as we know it in Daniel, lasted about 70 years, and it was the most powerful kingdom on the face of the earth. But as we look at this kingdom, it has its original beginnings way back with Nimrod. Nimrod, who was the son of Cush, who was the grandson of Ham, the son of Noah. So he was a Cushite. And Nimrod was a mighty man. mighty, probably because of his ability to conquer and his ability to hunt. He is the seat of many of the origins of idolatry since the flood. And he set up many of the chief, or some of the chief cities that later evolved into this mighty kingdom of Babylon. And we'll get into that more when we see this image and we see that it's the top head of the image and the head of gold. So we're talking about a powerful kingdom and one that's referred to not only in the book of Daniel but even other places, even in the book of Revelation. And it's always looked upon as the seat of idolatry, the captor of God's people, the thing to be guarded against and to be feared and to ultimately be destroyed by God. Now, as we look at Babylon, I'd like to read some of the accounts of the city of Babylon from Haley's Handbook of Bible, of the Bible. Babylon, scene of Daniel's ministry, was the wonder city of the ancient world. Situated in the cradle of the human race near the Garden of Eden region, built round the Tower of Babel, first seat of empire, a favorite residence of Babylonian, Assyrian, and Persian kings, even of Alexander the Great, a commanding city through the whole pre-Christian era, Babylon was brought to the zenith of its power and glory in the days of Daniel by Nebuchadnezzar, who was Daniel's friend, and who during his 45 years' reign never wearied of building and beautifying its palaces and temples. Now let's look at some of the facts of Babylon. The size of Babylon, ancient historians said that its wall was 60 miles around, that would be 15 miles on each side, 300 feet high, 80 feet thick, extending 35 feet below the ground so that the enemies could not tunnel under, built of brick 1 foot square and 3 or 4 inches thick, 1/4 mile of clear space between the city and the wall all the way around, the wall protected by wide and deep moats or canals filled with water, 250 towers on the wall, guard rooms for soldiers, 100 gates of brass. The city was divided by the Euphrates into almost two equal parts, both banks guarded by brick walls all the way, with 25 gates connecting the streets and ferry boats, one bridge on stone piers, 1/2 mile long, 30 feet wide with drawbridges, which were removed at night. A tunnel under the river, 15 feet wide and 12 feet high. Excavations of recent years have, to a large extent, verified the seemingly fabulous accounts of ancient historians. Well, it was a temple, it was a city of idolatry. It had the great temple of Merodach, or Baal, adjoining the Tower of Babylon, which some think was the Tower of Babel. It was the most renowned sanctuary in all the Euphrates Valley. It contained a golden image of Baal, that's spelled B-E-L, and a golden table which together weighed not less than 50,000 pounds. At the top were golden images of Baal and Ishtar, two golden lions, a golden table 40 feet long and 15 feet wide, a human figure of solid gold 18 feet high. Truly Babylon was a city of gold, according to Isaiah 14 and 4. The city was very religious. It had 53 temples and 180 altars to Ishtar. It may have been the plain between the Tower of Babylon and the palace of Nebuchadnezzar that the image of gold was set up, that we read of in chapter 3, verse 1. Nebuchadnezzar's palace, into which Daniel often went, was one of the most magnificent buildings ever erected on earth. Its vast ruins were uncovered by a cold way in 1899 to 1912. The south walls of the throne room were 20 feet thick. The north side of the palace was protected by three walls. Just north of them were more walls 50 feet thick. A little further on, more massive walls. And about a mile further on was the inner wall of the city, which consisted of two parallel walls of brick, each about 20 feet thick and 40 feet apart, the space between filled with rubble, making a total thickness of 80 feet with a deep and wide moat on the outside. And further on was the outer wall, built in the same manner. In the days of ancient warfare, the city was simply impregnable. The Hanging Gardens of Babylon were one of the seven wonders of the ancient world. Built by Nebuchadnezzar for his Median queen, beautiful daughter of Cyaxares, who had helped her father to conquer Nineveh, on several tiers of arches, one over another, each bearing a solid platform, 400 feet square, terraces, and top covered with flowers, shrubs, and trees, garden on the roof, watered from reservoir on the top, to which water was raised from the river by hydraulic pumps. Underneath the arches were luxurious apartments and the pleasure ground of the palace, built while Daniel was chief governor of the wise men of Babylon. Coldway uncovered arches in the northeast corner of the palace, which he thought were the Hanging Gardens. Now, they also excavated a tablet from this Hanging Gardens that had on it the name of Jehoiachin, the king of Judah, and it stated that he was given a certain allotment of grain and wine, I believe. So that proves that he was here as a prisoner. Processional Street, the great royal and sacred road, entered at the north, gradually ascended, passed into the palace grounds at the northeast corner through Ishtar Gate and high over the center of the city, gradually descending to the southeast corner of the Tower of Babylon wall, where it turned directly west to the river bridge. On both sides were highly defensive walls, 20 feet thick, adorned with brilliant, many-colored glazed reliefs of lions. The city was paved with stone slabs 3 feet square. Near the entrance to the palace, the blocks are still in their place, just as they were when Daniel walked over them. And they've got pictures in here of these ruins. They got one here of these hanging gardens, another of some of the walls in the ruins of ancient Babylon, and several pictures in the book of the city. Here's one of the ruins of Nebuchadnezzar's palace that they've dug up, showing that massive wall at the throne room. So we see now we're talking about a civilization that was highly developed. We're talking about an area that was powerful. And what we're going to see in the book of Daniel now is this highly developed idolatrous area where they knew nothing but idolatrous gods, and God's people completely captive, completely subdued, as though their God didn't even exist. And we're going to see then God making himself known in the midst of all of this among these idolatrous people, working through men like Daniel. Daniel lived in this kingdom throughout its entire existence. He was here even up to 3 years after Cyrus invaded it, and it became the Median kingdom, and then later the Medo-Persian empire. So he lived through the 70 years of its existence and even on beyond into that of the rule of Cyrus. So his entire lifetime after he was first taken here was spent in the Babylonian empire. Now, as we said, this begins about B.C. 606, and about 1,744 years after the flood, 397 years after the temple had been built. So we'll begin the first book, the first verse of Daniel. In the third year of the reign of Jehoiakim, king of Judah, came Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon, unto Jerusalem, and besieged it. Now this is just giving a brief thumbnail sketch of what happened. Jehoiakim, in the third year of his reign, while his city was besieged by Nebuchadnezzar. Nebuchadnezzar was the young ruler who had just taken over in this new kingdom from his father, and he besieged this city. And I read where he was taken a prisoner and shackled and to be carried to Babylon, but probably died before he got out of the city. Now this Jehoiachin, who came after him and whose name is not on our board, he was taken out, and he lived probably for 30 or 40 years in the, or for many years, as a captive in Babylon. And he's the one whose name was found in the Hanging Gardens on this tablet. And the Lord gave Jehoiakim, king of Judah, into his hand, with part of the vessels of the house of God, which he carried into the land of Shinar to the house of his God. And he brought the vessels into the treasure house of his God. Now, these are just the articles of the temple and of the worship. And this is probably speaking of the two or three times that Jerusalem was sacked and carried off. Not just the first time, but with Jehoiakim and Jehoiachin and then Zedekiah, who came some 10 or 15 years later in the 11th year of Zedekiah's reign, which would have been somewhere around 585 to 587 B.C. So it started at 606, and I think the first carrying away was about 597, and then about 587, there wasn't much left of Jerusalem, and the temple was destroyed. And the king spake unto Ashpenaz, the master of his eunuchs, that he should bring certain of the children of Israel, and of the king's seed, and of the princes. So this man who is called Ashpenaz, the master of his eunuchs, and we don't know if he was just master over eunuchs or if that's just a kind of a figurative term for his position or not, but he was told to bring certain of the children of Israel and of the king's seed and of the princes. So this man was to have the highest in the land under his charge and to bring them into the vicinity where the king could kind of have some kind of a hold on them and to use them. Children in whom was no blemish, but well favored and skillful in all wisdom and cunning in knowledge and understanding science, and such as had ability in them to stand in the king's palace, and whom they might teach the learning and the tongue of the Chaldeans. So you can see the description here. These are the highest, most well-educated and knowledgeable and intelligent and healthy people that they could have. People that could stand in the king's palace. That is, they would look good in the king's palace or make the king's palace look good by their presence. People who they could teach this tongue of the Chaldeans. They were in a foreign land now and had to learn a new tongue, a new language. And the king appointed them a daily provision of the king's meat and of the wine which he drank, so nourishing them 3 years, that at the end thereof they might stand before the king. Now, it was customary for the king to take these persons that he had under special observation and had special purposes for. It was customary for him to let them eat what was left off of his table, which doesn't mean they were just having table scraps, but it meant that the king ate so lavishly that he wouldn't even touch maybe many of the things that would be given to them to eat. And it says here that at the end thereof they might stand before the king at the end of this three-year period. Now, I'd like to read just a little bit from Mr. Clark here as to what he says about this particular verse, because I think it's most interesting from several standpoints. He says this was deemed, this three-year period, this was deemed a sufficient time to acquire the Chaldee language and the sciences peculiar to that people. Now notice his comments. This is written over 100 years ago, about 1829. I suppose they had good introductory books, able teachers, and a proper method, else they would have been obliged, like us, to send their children 7 years to school and as many to the university to teach them any tolerable measure of useful and ornamental literature. Oh, how reproachful to the nations of Europe, and particularly to our own, is this backward mode of instruction. Now, he's talking about England, but I thought that the school teachers in our midst might enjoy what he has to say here. He says, how reproachful to the nations of Europe, and particularly to our own, is this backward mode of instruction. This is where they go 7 years to grade school and 7 years to the university. And what is generally learned after this vast expense of time and money? A little Latin, Greek, and mathematics, perhaps a little more of philosophy, and by this they are entitled, not qualified, to teach others, and especially to teach the people the important science of salvation. To such shepherds, and there are many such, the hungry sheep look up and are not fed. And if all are not such, no thanks to our plan of national education. So he's saying that these Babylonians had a lot more faith in their ability than the Englishmen did, to say that after 3 years of instruction, these people taken from a foreign land, like Daniel and his three friends, would be taught enough of the language and the history and the science of the Chaldeans then to come before the king and to be used for the king's purpose. Verse 6, now among these were the children of Judah, Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah. And this word children here, we need to understand that it doesn't mean the same thing as we think of as children, but it can mean a young person. It can mean somebody in the early adult life as well as somebody who is a child. So these are probably not children in the true sense that we would think of as children today because of the translation from the Hebrew. So these, Daniel and his three friends, and these are the names of them, Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah, unto whom the prince of the eunuchs gave names, for he gave unto Daniel the name of Belteshazzar, and to Hananiah of Shadrach, and to Mishael of Meshach, and to Azariah of Abednego. So we know them by these other names that were given to them, these idolatrous names, Belteshazzar, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. And we don't like to think of them from the names of Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah. But the names that were given to them were a sign or a mark of authority placed upon them by their captors. For example, Belteshazzar means the treasure of Baal. That's the name given to Daniel. He was named the treasure of Baal, this god that they worshipped as an idol. Whereas the original name Daniel meant, God is my judge. Now the name Hananiah meant, the Lord has been gracious to me. But the name given to him, Shadrach, means, let God preserve us from evil. The name Mishael is, he who comes from God. That's his Hebrew name. But the name that was given to him, Meshach, means who belongs to the goddess of Shishak. Meshach. Possession of the goddess Shishak. And Azariah, that Hebrew name means the Lord is my helper, but the idolatrous name given to him, Abednego, means that he's the servant of Nego. Abednego, the servant of Nego, who was also an idolatrous god. So we can see how that these names are actually degrading names to these men, because they are the names given by their captors and not their original Hebrew names. But Daniel purposed in his heart that he would not defile himself with the portion of the king's meat, nor with the wine which he drank. Therefore he requested the prince of the eunuchs that he might not defile himself. Now, it seems that what happened here is that this portion of the king's meat that came from the king's table consisted of things that had been offered to idols, and offered or sacrificed or consecrated to idols. And also some of these meats were probably things that were unclean for the Hebrews to eat, maybe pork or whatever they weren't supposed to eat. And so, and also these meats might have been strangled or might not have been bled or might have been cooked with the blood. Many things that could have violated the Hebrew dietary and religious laws along this line. And so Daniel decided this would be a defilement for him, and he would not eat of this portion from the king's table. And so he asked that he might not defile himself. He asked this prince that he might not defile himself. Now God had brought Daniel into favor and tender love with the prince of the eunuchs. Somehow or other, the prince of the eunuchs had a favorable feeling toward Daniel. And so Daniel could approach him on this matter and have him to listen to him and see what they could work out. And the prince of the eunuchs said unto Daniel, I fear my lord the king, who hath appointed your meat and your drink, for why should he see your face worse liking than the children which are of your sort? Then shall you make me endanger my head to the king. He told Daniel, said, I'm afraid of the king who's appointed me to give you this food here. This is what he wants you to have. He knows it's going to be good for you. And if he sees you looking worse than these other people that you're living with and eating with, well, he's going to have my head for it because he wants you to do as good as they do. Then said Daniel to Melzar, whom the prince of the eunuchs had set over Daniel, Hananiah, Meshach, and Azariah, prove thy servants, I beseech thee, 10 days. Let them give us pulse to eat.